North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week on Friday, November 14th. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here, as usual, with Chris Bessler. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. And I'm going to throw a shout-out to my favorite two listeners, Ren and Pepper. Got to do that.
Yes, absolutely. Good morning, Ren. Good morning, Pepper. Good morning, everybody.
Yes.
Here we are on a cloudy but not rainy yet Friday, November 14th. We're also joined in the studio by two writers for the Sandpoint Reader. The editor-in-chief, Zach Hagedon, is here. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning.
And the senior writer, Sansare Mitchell, is here as well. Good morning, Sansare.
Good morning.
It was a full paper today, and it's probably going to be a pretty full show here this morning. Or yesterday's paper was pretty full. And yes, lots going on. We will start with some state news and move our way down the list of headlines. In the state, the governor's race is on as Democrat Terry Pickens of Boise has announced her bid for the office. In the county, some big news to talk with Sansare Mitchell about a little later on in the program. The county has officially now replaced the minor land division process that saga that lasted since, I believe, March has finally come to an end, and the minor land divisions are no longer exist in name, at least in Bonner County. Also in Bonner County, the Bonner Board of County Commissioners plans to reconsider the proposed Deerfield subdivision, which is off of Baldy Mountain Road, right outside of Sandpoint city limits here. And in Sandpoint, I don't know if this is our top story, but probably the thing that has most listeners interested right now is that officials from the city of Sandpoint, the Lake Pondre School District, the YMCA, and District 1 Senator Jim Woodward of Sagal met to discuss community concerns relating to appropriate locker room usage at the YMCA. The review of the code stems, it also prompted an agenda item at City Council on Wednesday. The review of the code at the city level stems from an incident at the Lighthouse YMCA where a lifeguard said she saw a semi-dressed man in the women's locker room showers. When asked for comment, the YMCA told the Daily Bee that its locker room procedure adheres to Sandpoint Code 5-2-10, and the city's non-discrimination ordinance. Mayor Jeremy Grimm said the latter part of the current code extends the city's reach and opens it up to costly litigation. In his proposal to the council, Grimm said that the amended ordinance he plans to bring at its next meeting, which will be next Wednesday, will bring the city more in line with state and federal regulations. The YMCA officials told the Daily Bee that there are several measures put in place to create a safe environment, including continuous sex offender registry checks for all members and guests, mandated reporting of abuse and incidents, and child abuse prevention training for all staff and high access volunteers. The meeting of City Council was certainly emotionally charged and brought testimony from city residents as well as other concerned residents of the area. Also in the city, Sandpoint Planning and Zoning is considering a substantial overhaul of short-term rental regulations within city limits. The current cap of 35 units within the city is proposed to be removed entirely. This is spurred on by action at the state level and in efforts to avoid a potential lawsuit. The Festival of Sandpoint has announced the departure of its executive director, Ali Baranski, who headed that organization for 6 years. And the future of the festival, the next executive director, or what the new organization will look like, is currently under discussion by the board of directors. Out in Pend Oreille, the Bonner Mall changed hands over the summer, and new renderings show plans for significant change. I hope we have time to talk about that this morning, but we'll see. Sansare Mitchell has the story in the Sandpoint Reader. There is more to talk about, but boy, that seems like enough for now. Any other headlines you want to read out, Chris, or anyone, before we kind of move on to discussion?
Sure. I'll mention that Schweitzer has just announced that they're going to push back their opening date. They were planning to open next Friday, the 21st. They're pushing it back a week. They're getting a lot of precipitation, but the temperatures aren't quite cold enough. So hopefully we get that snow by the 28th.
Mm-hmm. I read all that right now there really is to know for certain about that, about the incident at the YMCA, and then the news really is, I guess, the actions that the city currently proposes to take in response. It looks like actions will be taken at the city level. If action is taken, it'll be taken at the city level in response to that, and that's about as far as it'll go. Is there anything more to say about that right now, or do we wait till next Wednesday after that meeting to see what shakes out?
I mean, I would note that we don't actually know what amendment they're talking about. I have not seen a draft amended ordinance. I mean, I've seen the existing ordinance, which has been in place since 2011 without incident.
Mm-hmm.
We've never been legally challenged on this. Sandpoint, some people may not know if they don't go back far enough or haven't been paying attention since 2011, but that ordinance that we put in place was actually kind of shepherded by Sandpoint Reader co-founder and former publisher John Reuter when he was on city council back in the day. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of the first non-discrimination ordinance of its kind in the state, and became the template for all the other cities in Idaho, including like Boise, Moscow, other big communities around the state sort of took our verbiage and adapted it for their own communities. So if we were to amend or overturn or, you know, alter in some way our ordinance, it could conceivably open the way for other parties throughout the state to reexamine their own ordinances. In light of, you know, whatever kind of challenge there might be. Although, again, the incident, quote unquote, that is being referred to at the YMCA wasn't really an incident. Nothing happened. There was kind of no there. It was reported on Facebook by an apparent volunteer
and I think
lifeguard.
The Facebook post and then the response to it just online is what seems to be driving this.
The online chatter was very light on specifics. We don't know. I mean, nothing happened. YMCA's policies weren't violated. The city of Sandpoint's policies weren't violated. Allegedly, the Sandpoint police were called to respond, and apparently, you know, according to reports, which we can't verify, Sandpoint police responded in a phone call saying that there was no law that was broken.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's kind of a tempest in a teapot for some people who feel, you know, personally and maybe ideologically and philosophically offended or frightened or whatever, who are trying to push this change. And the city is clearly willing to listen to those concerns and potentially take action. But again, you know, we don't know what the amended ordinance would look like. We don't know what part of the ordinance would be amended. So we're just going to have to wait and see. And for now, it's a lot of sound and fury, signifying very little other than sort of like feelings.
But what is the YMCA policy on this?
Well, the YMCA retains a policy, according to what I've read, that, you know, they make accommodations for all people, regardless, you know, of who they are or how they identify or their gender expression. And they align with the current Sandpoint City non-discrimination ordinance, which is to provide accommodations for people regardless of, you know, their gender identity or expression. Mm-hmm. So Yeah. I mean, if YMCA changes its policy, that's its prerogative. It's a private mm-hmm. organization. If the city wants to change its ordinance and align it, quote unquote, with federal and state policy, then that's going to be a whole different conversation, because federal and state policy are either non-existent, mm-hmm. On some levels for protections of, transgender people, or they're very confused.
So none of us in this room are lawyers here, no. But it seems to me that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that if Sandpoint changed or even just eliminated entirely its non-discrimination ordinance, if they took the most dramatic possible action on this, it doesn't actually affect the YMCA. It doesn't require the YMCA to do anything. Well, YMCA is still free then to observe its to determine who gets to go into which right. locker room if they so choose.
Yeah, I mean, YMCA is mm-hmm. its prerogative is to make whatever policies it deems fit, mm-hmm. For its membership. When it comes to the city, the argument as it's sort of developed over the past week, this is a pretty fast moving yep. issue, really. I mean, I don't think anyone was talking about this until maybe remarkably 2 fast. Weeks ago, yeah. Mm-hmm. really. But if the city wants to change its policy or remove its policy, I think the argument as it's been developing so far is that we don't necessarily need our non-discrimination ordinance anymore, or at least we don't need portions of it.
Yeah.
Because changes to federal law since 2011, when we enacted our ordinance, have come in and sort of like taken the burden off of us is the argument. Now, there's some nuance to that. So there was a 2020 U.S. Supreme Court case, Bostock versus Clayton County. And that decision at the U.S. Supreme Court said that you can't fire people for being, LGBTQ plus. Mm-hmm. So it has employment protections. But if you drill a little deeper into that, according to the ACLU of Idaho, who have issued a policy brief on this matter, which we didn't really get a chance to report on too much in this mm-hmm. week's paper, but next week we will, mm-hmm. They note some critical distinctions, right? I mean, that has protections for employers who have 15 or more employees.
Yeah.
Now, there is no protection for transgender or LGBTQ individuals for employers 15 and under mm-hmm. In state law. And, of course, most of the employers in Bonner County and Sandpoint are small employers. So mm-hmm. So the argument that ACLU would present and has sort of presented in their policy brief is that if we remove our NDO that we have currently and sort of rely on federal statute or federal Supreme Court decisions to extend protections, we're going to lose that sort of small employer protection. Mm-hmm. Because state law doesn't have anything at all mm-hmm. To sort of fill that gap. And that's to say nothing of accommodations. I mean, Idaho state law has notoriously refused to, quote unquote, add the words mm-hmm. Regarding LGBTQ protections to anything.
Yeah.
I mean, and the Idaho legislature has refused to do this for probably, 15, 20 years now.
Yeah.
We used to have major protests down in Boise when I was working at Boise Weekly. I remember covering lawmakers and citizen activists and advocates for, sort of human rights mm-hmm. would come to the legislature every year and say, add the words. Mm-hmm. And the legislature won't do it. So Idaho law, Idaho state code is silent, I think, on a lot of these issues. So, which is why Sandpoint had its non-discrimination ordinance enacted in 2011 mm-hmm. was to provide sort of a citywide level of protection in the absence of a state decision. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, that federal decision in 2020 has come through, and that does provide some protections, but not as many as we have. And I think that the mayor, Jeremy Grimm, is worried that because Sandpoint's NDO goes beyond sort of the federal definitions and the mm-hmm. federal protections, that we are overstepping the mark with our ordinance, which opens us to this kind of litigation potentially, but there is no litigation right now.
So exactly. Right.
It's the fear of litigation.
Yes. There's no litigation.
And the exposure to it.
And and it's exposed in my reading of it, we're exposed to it only if and when the city determines to take legal action against an employer or against an entity.
Or if an individual brings a lawsuit.
If the individual brings a lawsuit, but does the city become involved if the... I don't know.
Well, I mean, again, not being a lawyer,
yeah,
I will say that if our NDO is embroiled in some kind of litigation, then it's conceivable the city would become a party if someone argues like this NDO goes too far. It's not supported by federal statute. It's not supported by state authority. Yeah, I mean, we could, I guess, potentially, conceivably end up in court over it. And they just kind of want to wash their hands of the entire thing is the sense that I get. And that meeting, the special meeting we had on Wednesday, was the mood from the city officials was like, we don't want to deal with this.
Yeah. So they meet again next Wednesday, the 19th. Mm-hmm. And this is on the agenda for that?
Well, we haven't seen the actual formal agenda yet. At least I haven't. But it was sort of promised that this would return. As an actual amended ordinance, and then we'll see some details about, you know, the precise sort of like button pushing and, you know, how they're going to tighten it up or whatever.
You would think they would have a proposed ordinance change out before the meeting, so people would have something to react to.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about something that's going to affect a lot more people, which is this Sandpoint planning and zoning decision or consideration of a substantial overhaul of short-term rental regulations within city limits. We touched briefly on this last week, which was when Director Welker made the announcement during his staff report during the last meeting, but that overhaul would remove entirely the current cap of 35 units on the short-term rentals that are not owner-occupied, meaning that there could be an unlimited number of homes that are owned by individuals or entities and not and rented out just as hotel rooms, basically. Airbnbs and VRBOs and that sort of thing. This is spurred on by action at the state level and in efforts to avoid a potential lawsuit Director Welker stated. So I guess my question is there pushback on this from anybody either on planning and zoning or city council yet? Is this the way we're going to go?
Right. Well, not to hog the airwaves here, but I think astute readers will notice that we have several headlines that use the word consider. So there's a lot of things under consideration. Mm-hmm. And this is one that's kind of been bubbling up. And I haven't heard a ton of pushback from city council or P&Z because sort of like the other issue we were just talking about with the non-discrimination ordinance, I haven't seen the actual proposed ordinance yet for how we would change the regulation of our short-term rentals. And also, like that other issue, it's being prompted by sort of the fear or the threat of a lawsuit. And if people remember back a couple of months ago, there was the housing committee that Senator Woodward sort of organized, and they were going around and doing meetings around the state. And they brought a meeting here to Sandpoint, and they met at City Hall, and it had representatives of various housing agencies, sort of advocacy groups, some legislators. And the point was to sort of discuss like the state of housing in Idaho. And when we had our meeting here in Sandpoint, one of the presenters was from a Vacation Rental Alliance, you know, organization. So representing owners of short-term rentals, and they were pretty forcefully clear that they would sue, and they have sued other communities in the state over regulations on, you know, capping the number of short-term rentals. In places like, you know, I mean, this is just an example, but like McCall, Sun Valley, you know, sort of resort communities. Mm-hmm. And I think that put kind of a bug in the ear of City Hall saying like, wow, okay. I mean, I think they knew that this could happen at some point, that there would be a lawsuit targeting this cap. But to hear it sort of stated in a public forum like that from an actual sort of industry, quote unquote, group, kind of put some urgency on addressing the issue. So now here we have this concept of kind of, again, sort of washing our hands of the issue, saying like, okay, you're going to sue us. We just won't regulate. Don't sue us, please. Mm-hmm. And that may well be what we consider at P&Z next Tuesday. But again, we don't know. I mean, I haven't seen the verbiage of any kind of
in these other cities. Has Airbnb prevailed on getting rid of these caps?
In some places, yes. In some places, no. you know, it depends on the political will, I guess, of various city halls and city administrations to fight in court over this. And it's the sense that I get is that Sandpoint just doesn't want to have a dog in this fight. And it would prefer just to sort of like cede the ground, step back, and then sort of like not have this legal jeopardy, you know, of a potential lawsuit. And if that's enough to appease these folks, you know, who might bring litigation, then so be it. The upshot's going to be, of course, that we will see a lot more short-term rentals throughout the town, and it's going to become a longer-term discussion about affordability and who controls the housing stock and the inventory that we have, and to what purpose. So I'm anticipating that to be a fairly robust conversation on Tuesday next week at Planning and Zoning, which meets at 5:30 at City Hall. You can go in person. You can watch online at the City of Sandpoint's website. And I think it's going to be a worthy discussion. And I think it's going to be a little bit fraught, potentially, depending on what they bring. I mean, I don't really know what they're going to bring. They could just, like, remove all regulations. They could tweak it. I mean, who knows? I mean, the deliberative process has yet to play out, really.
Yeah. Well, how about something that actually got done and is not just under consideration? After months and months of deliberation, the Board of County Commissioners of Bonner County has passed a new ordinances relating to the minor land division process, or rather, the minor land division process has been altogether replaced. Sansaray, but it was not a unanimous vote. Was that surprising to you at all, or did you anticipate that it'd go 2-1?
I did anticipate that. This was actually at the second meeting, just on the final vote. The first meeting was continued because there were only two commissioners present, and neither could agree. And the dissenting vote, Commissioner Ron Korn, has been very vocal about his opinions on MLDs and how they relate to, in his opinion and in the opinion of the Bonner County Republican Central Committee and their leader, Scott Herndon, property rights. And so the issue that it came down to and the reason that they couldn't come up with a unanimous vote is essentially the other two commissioners, Domke and Williams, said, you know, all right, we don't think that this is necessarily a property right, but it does involve property rights and property. So what is the alternative to striking MLDs to protect landowners, neighboring landowners from everything that they have said that is caused by these subdivisions, which we'll get into a little bit later. And Commissioner Korn did not have a alternative except to say that everyone should just sue each other.
Got a lot of litigation.
Yeah,
this week,
and a lot of litigation.
Yeah.
So essentially, I know we've been talking about this for months, but minor land divisions were supposed to be a quick and easy way that families could divide their land between one another. Supposed to be inexpensive, and it didn't have the regulations that subdivisions had. And the issue that became was that developers were using the minor land process to create subdivisions that did not have the required infrastructure to actually support them. So there was a slew of legal battles and other issues where people who moved into these de facto subdivisions had issues with their sewer, with their water. They had sewer going into the water. They had roads that didn't legally exist and parcels that weren't the right size. And so some people have spent millions of dollars trying to litigate and fix these homes that were built. And Korn argued that that is a property right to
to divide your
to divide your land however you want, no matter the consequences.
Okay,
which, you know, that's a popular thing. Everyone in Idaho, it seems, doesn't want government oversight of property, and then it leads to these issues, and then they sue, and they're sad about it. But it's kind of an issue that we created for ourselves.
The I guess Korn's idea was, or the outgoing minor land division process allowed you to divide it, a 10-acre plot into how much? You remember?
Into four parcels, okay. And then it was supposed to be non-contiguous so that you couldn't make more than that. Uh-huh. But that just meant that developers had to wait 2 years before they did it again, which is nothing when you're developing, you know, 20 homes.
Yeah. So there, yeah, and that did come down. Let's see, the other change, I guess, or the change to the maximum requested variance to be handled administratively, as in without a public hearing, changed from 30% to 20%. Can you explain exactly what that is going to mean and why Korn opposed that one as well?
Yeah, so...
Because that passed. They changed it down to 20%, I believe, right?
Yes, but, it did.
But what is that? What does that mean, and what is Ron Korn's opposition to it?
So previously, you're building your house, and maybe there's like a weird part of land. There's some weird rock or something that you have to sort of relocate your home, mm-hmm. and it needs to be a little bit too close to your neighbor.
Okay.
Or 30%. Too close. They're 30% over the required setback.
Sure.
So then you go to the county and you request a variance.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, there's a 30% difference that the planning director could just say approve or denied.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've lowered that to 20, which means if you go to 21%, then you invoke a public hearing. And so it's meant to give neighbors, to give other residents more input, and also allow the elected officials to deliberate on that and show everyone that they're deliberating on it. Because as Domke said, you know, that can be a matter of maybe 10, 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a case a few years ago, I guess, where one neighbor built the house a little bit too close and the snow falls off onto the other neighbor's fence. Mm. He owns a farm, and so the farm animals get out all the time. So it can be a big issue.
Sure.
And Commissioner Korn was opposed to this because it creates more public meetings, and he thought that that's more work and more time that the elected officials don't have, in his opinion.
Hmm. Okay. But it's now officially on the books, and the new law is that there's short and long subdivisions, short subdivisions of 10 parcels or fewer, long subdivisions of 11 parcels or more, and both of those will fall under the jurisdiction and protections of the Local Land Use Planning Act. As well as the existing requirements for subdivisions.
Yeah. So now they do have to prove that, like, if they dig a well and they also put in a septic system, that the septic system isn't going to drain into the well.
Sure.
Other protections like that, no matter how small you're dividing. There is still the family exemption, which allows you to break up your parcel into three additional parcels for a total of four.
Mm-hmm.
So that's meant to be a more cost-effective family way to keep, you know, the grandkids and the kids all living sort of together. And
mm-hmm.
So that costs less. It doesn't involve the rules and regulations of a subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
There was discussion. People wanted to bump that up from 4 to 10 parcels
mm-hmm.
because a couple people came in and said, you know, I've got 8 kids, mm-hmm. which is kind of common. but the commissioners decided that that would probably create the same loophole that MLDs did because, you know, you can split your parcel up into 10 for all of your kids and then all of your kids can just sell to the same developer, do that, or even if you put 10 houses for your 10 kids on the property, you've created a subdivision and it still needs those protections.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay. But it is now, but the law has officially changed and Bonner County has accomplished something and moves on to other business. Like, for example, they get to reconsider the proposed Deerfield subdivision. The Board of County Commissioners will hold a public land use hearing on Monday, November 17th at 10 a.m. This is a kind of a, at least for people who live in Sandpoint, this is a relevant. This is right next to the Baldfoot Disc Golf Course. It's just outside of town. It'll, you know, what are they proposing to build there? How many, like, is this a big subdivision or how large would this be?
So they're proposing to split 32-ish acres into 24 lots. And mm-hmm. so you can consider that to be 24 homes, or those homes can have like a mother-in-law's suite and things and a barn and everything. So it could be a lot more buildings, or it could just be 24 buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And the big issue here, essentially, the developers, when they put in their applications, they had all of their ducks in a row based on the way the county usually operates. And so they submitted their request to approve the preliminary plat, and it was missing some information. And the previous zoning commission said, okay, we approve this conditionally, and then you can just come back with that information and we'll give it final approval. That went to the Board of Commissioners, and they said, no, you have to have all of this information before we can even think about approving it. So they gave them more time. The developers came back and had most of the information. However, they were waiting from a letter from FEMA, from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, confirming or changing the mapped floodplain that is on the properties. And they've already accounted for the floodplain as it exists right now. They're not building on it. They have 20 to 30 foot setbacks. They haven't placed any of their septic systems in that area. But it does need to be confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, recently, the government has been shut down and has not been quick to confirm things. So the commissioners just voted it down and said, come back and reapply later once FEMA has gotten back to you. FEMA has not gotten back to them. However, they are reapplying. I'm not sure what new information they would like to present at this time.
So I think one prime concern with this is that we're going to have 24 septic systems in a fairly, small unit there once you take out the property for the wetlands. So what's the status of, testing to make sure that we aren't going to be putting pollution into Syringa Creek?
Yeah, so Panhandle Health District did go out there and do a test, a perk test, percolation, to see how groundwater filters down. And they said, it's fine, essentially. But they said very specifically, we don't know what the ultimate perk test is going to be, because you have to get in there, dig up all of the dirt for building, build the roads, do everything, because that will change the composition of the soil and usually make it perk better because you're breaking up whatever clay and stuff is down there. So even though they said, it's kind of iffy right now, their best guess was once all of that work gets done, then it'll probably be fine. And so they told the commissioners, you can approve this conditionally, and then once they put in all that work, we will come back and do the tests again and tell you if it works and if there are any special precautions that you have to take. But they were not happy with that, so.
All right. Well, as expected, we went long on this show. The annual citywide leaf pickup is scheduled for November 17th through 20.
That's the top news of the week.
Yeah, yeah. Get your leaves out there.
You buried the lead.
Yeah, sorry.
Buried the leaf.
Hey, Zach, you spent some time in Boise as a reporter. Did you ever run across Terry Pickens?
Well, not personally. I'm familiar with Terry Pickens,
yeah.
And I'm familiar with the Pickens Law Firm.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's cut kind of a large figure in the sort of Idaho Democratic ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
With politics. But She ran for lieutenant governor, people might remember, back in 2022 against Scott Bedke, who's the current lieutenant governor. I think she pulled about 30-something percent of the vote in that election, which is not, you know, not great, but it's pretty good, you know, for a Democrat statewide against somebody like Scott Bedke, who's a well-known sort of like power player in the Idaho Republican Party. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see her campaign develop over the next year.
She's running for
governor. Yeah, she just announced. I think Brad Little's running again. Have we heard an official announcement?
It'd be his third term.
Right? I missed it he announced. But so whoever is going to run for governor as a Republican is going to be up against Terry Pickens. And I feel like, you know, with the results of the most recent election nationwide, where Democrats did pretty darn well around the country, maybe now Democrats are feeling like the time is right to sort of like go after some of these offices, and maybe they'll do better than they have in past cycles.
Yeah,
in past who knows?
20 years or so.
Hard
to remember, but we've had a series of Democratic governors.
Well, Cecil Andrus,
Cecil Andrus, one of the great, John Evans.
So that'll be interesting to watch. The other thing I want to mention too, though, speaking of leadership positions, is we had a piece this week about Phil Huff, who is announced he's retiring from the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness.
Yeah.
A slacker.
So we had a profile. Well, 21 years. Maybe he's earned the right to rest a little bit. But we had a profile on him, and we just wanted to kind of note that it's a big change. Important organization in the community, does a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of programs just personally with Scotchman Peaks. I did the Wolverine study many years ago. I actually dragged a half of a dead beaver through the forest with my mom and my wife and my then infant son and my brother.
And that study actually showed that, they came up with some.
It was a very, very, very important scientifically significant study, but it was a fun experience. We did that, I think, two winters in a row. You drag a frozen half of a beaver. And you go nail it to a tree.
But the new ED is well familiar.
Rose Olson.
Rose Olson has taken over. Yep. So she's been here for, I think, 3 years.
She came to the organization in 2023. I think she did communications and marketing and then kind of quickly sort of rose through the ranks. She was the deputy executive director most recently. So I think they've been working on the transition since the spring when Phil kind of decided it was time to pass the torch. So now here we go. Yeah. We'll have a new executive director for Scotchman Peaks in January.
Yeah.
And a new one coming for the festival as well.
We got a lot of changes going on.
Has announced that she is stepping down for health and personal reasons, I guess. And she's been pretty big mainstay for the festival for several years now.
Yeah. Well, and her tenure was so tumultuous. She came in right at the beginning of the festival, sort of the gun lawsuit, with like whether or not they could have prohibit firearms or weapons of any kind at the memorial field because it's, rented from the city, technically public property. So that whole thing was like right as she came in. And then we had, the turf change from grass to artificial turf and all the changes that required of the festival.
Yeah, they put a big financial burden on them.
Right.
To come up with a lot more money.
Added
now.
Several hundred thousands of dollars, to their operating costs just to sort of accommodate that new surface. Then we had COVID. Right as she's... So Allie had a rough go there with like sort of external things, kind of pressing in on the organization.
Yeah.
And, the fact that the festival survived and thrived through that time is a testament.
It has been thriving, This year was a little tough.
Some of the policy changes and things, have kind of rankled some folks, but,
Hey, tune in on Tuesdays to hear Phil Huff here on KRFY. He volunteers some of his time for this radio station and talks to folks mostly about kind of outdoor recreational pursuits and does a great job for this radio station and from what I understand, although he might take a little time off and do some extended traveling around the country, he has no plans to step away from his important volunteer role here. So you can, those of us who will miss Phil Huff can still hear him on Tuesday mornings on the morning show. And now let's move on to Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thank you very much for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Sansaray. For bringing us the news this week.
Well, thank you.